Hi, everyone. It's Sam and John and Gary with you for another campfire conversation. So tonight, we want to talk about the subject of living an examined life. And I love the way Sam put it in the email about on this kind of superhighway of life, you know, we'd pull off to rest stops every once in a while and kind of hear the Holy Spirit saying, stop, rest, relax, think, contemplate, listen. But the way this subject came up was I was telling, I think in one conversation Sam and I had that, you know, I've started a 8-week course at our church. It's called a focus group, and I've just called it recalibrating and reorienting. And I've said this is for this one specifically for guys in the later part of their life. Originally I said 50 and older, and then I said no, these are just for guys who have been on the trail for a while, because they didn't really want to have an age line to have to cross over. But so after the first meeting, and the first time together was last Wednesday, you know, I talked a little bit about the importance of the second part of our life. I actually played a video interview that I did with Mark Haskins, who lives in Charlottesville, but also has a lake house in North Carolina. And I did this interview with him, and it was a phenomenal interview. And at one point he says, you know, he says, I have more life in back of me than in front of me. And I really hope that these years that I have on this earth, that I will make a significant difference in somebody's life in some way. And he said, I know that may not feel right to you, but he said, that's where my heart is. And, you know, and some people talk about being put on the shelf, and if that's the Lord's will, he needs to give me the grace for it. But I want to make a significant impact on people's lives with the rest of my life. And then just ask them, what do you think about that? What does that do for you? And they talked a little bit, and I was just trying to get them to go, gosh, that's what I want too. But here's what I noticed. I at one point, I also played that commercial from Farmers. You know, they've done 100 of them, and you know, the line at the end is, Farmers knows a thing or two because we've seen a thing or two. And I was just saying, you have seen a thing or two in your life. You know some things, and the world around you needs to know what you know. And what hit me was, I saw this look in their eyes that looked like, I don't know that I know anything. I don't know that I've learned anything. And I was just struck by the idea that I don't know that they've ever really examined their life. You know, what have they gone through? What did they learn from that? What was God teaching them? What did they learn from Scripture that is proved out in their life that now it's embedded in their heart? And it's just, you know, the idea of reflecting on your life. And so I was saying this to Sam, and then Sam, your reaction was what to all that?
Well, my wife does counseling with various women, and she had just been speaking with just a couple women in the last week who were experiencing great difficulty in their life, and she was asking them just some questions about self-reflection, and they both looked at her like a, you know, in the proverbial deer in the headlights, like, I never ask myself those kind of questions. I don't even think those kind of questions, you know. And Carla Kate just came home and said, are we weird, Sam? You know, because we're always sort of saying, now, how could we have done that better? Was that a smart way to do it? Would, you know, I mean, it's, there's, she and I just talked to each other about that pretty regularly, and she just realized it isn't the common thing. And yet, I really believe that it's part of just wisdom. You know, Mark Twain, he's not a believer at all. He said, making good decisions comes from experience, and experience comes from making bad decisions. You know, the idea being, it's okay that we've made some bad decisions and we get experience, but we want to be able to, in some ways, look back at our life and turn those bad decisions into wisdom so that we can make good decisions in the future. And yet, I don't know. Well, in a certain sense, the whole topic of my blog, Beliefs of the Heart, has to do with asking ourselves all kinds of questions, because, you know, we'll say in our head, I believe God loves me. And yet we're angry, we're bitter, we're scared, because something inside us doesn't. And I just want to sort of examine ourselves, just ask some questions so that we can grow in it. A few years ago, a guy that I know, you know, I've known actually for probably 30 years, but a guy came to me a few years ago and said, and he said, someone told him that he complains too much. And he asked me what I thought. And, you know, it's like one of those awkward things, because the truth is I thought he did complain a lot. it seemed like grumbling was the bass drum beat of his conversation. You know, he would say, my wife is a slob and my boss is too demanding and my colleagues don't appreciate me or no one wants to talk to me. And he sort of complained a lot, and I didn't know how to answer him, but I sort of uneasily admitted that maybe he does complain more than most. And I said, why do you think that is? Well, he just left in a huff. He just left in a huff. Determined, he said, I just will never complain again. Although I've wondered since then if he complained to his wife about me. But you know, a month or so later, I had breakfast with him again, and he wasn't complaining. But he was angry. He was livid with his wife for her housekeeping, and he was pissed at his boss for an assignment, and furious with coworkers for their ingratitude. And he exchanged sort of self-pitying complaining for other-blaming fury, and it was not an improvement. But I've often thought, if he could have just said, no, why am I complaining, or why am I bitter? You know, what in my life has caused me to be this way? I think he would have been a happier person, and I think people around him would have been happier.
Right.
So I really believe...
Well, you know...
Go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, and you know, in the past when we have talked about, you know, the wound, those things that have happened to us that have lodged in our heart, you know, first of all, the only way you even have a discussion about that, the only way you even start to approach it is you have to examine your heart, right? I mean, you have to say, why is it that I get so angry and behave poorly when this happens? Well, you have to, you know, it's all the examine life. And what I find is often we can do that in a certain environment, and then we forget.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're not living this continued examine life when things happen. So keep going, Sam.
Well, no, I mean, it's just the very thing you're saying is, it's just common sense to, I mean, this is why scientists do experiments. They do an experiment, and they examine the results, and they say, oh, I know a little bit more, and they do another experiment to fine-tune, and it's the way the information of life moves forward. I had a pastor at my church who had been a captain in the Rangers, the Army Rangers, which is a special ops group. And after every kind of action, they had to do an AAR. That's what he called it, an after-action report. And he said the motto was, the battle isn't over until the bullets have been counted. And he said it was their clever little way of saying, we had a battle, we're out of it, but let's count the bullets. Let's figure out what happened. Let's examine it from every angle so that next time we're better. You know, it was just common. So I always loved the line, the battle isn't over until the bullets have been counted.
Yeah, that's good.
And it was just a common sense way of saying, we want to learn from every battle so that we save lives. We just want to learn from every single battle we encounter so that we save somebody else's life tomorrow. So
yeah.
I guess I just want to say, I just think this is a valuable, incredibly valuable and important discipline and skill for us to learn. And so, you know, I know, Gary, you have some questions that we can just learn to ask so that we can... Who was the guy that said, listen to your life? Was that Tozer? There's some phrase, listen to your life. I forgot about it.
Yeah.
I'll find it while you talk.
Yeah, well, now, and don't forget, as you're looking at that, you know, the verse, the quote that you gave us was from Oswald Chambers, where at the end of it he said, it's really good to be honest. with your with yourself.
Yeah.
You remember that verse we talked about?
I do. Do you want to find it, or do you have it?
Yeah, I'm not finding it right off, so yeah, that would be good.
I'll try to find it.
So, okay, so, and John, you just jump on in here in a minute. So, you know, I have brought this up before because it had such an impact on me. But, you know, it was Paul Stanley, and we've had him on our conversations before, and I've mentioned him many times because he had such an impact on my life, mentoring me. But I remember him saying to me, and this is now decades ago, and he said, you know, we do not learn from experience. We learn from evaluated experience. That experience alone doesn't teach us anything. We have to stop and evaluate it. Why did that happen? Why did that not happen? You know, what was going on in me that caused me to do something I didn't want to do? Or, you know, why is it that I couldn't do in my heart what I wanted to do? I couldn't get myself to do it, to say it, to whatever that was. And so he would, when we'd meet every week for breakfast in the morning, he'd ask me about the week. Tell me what happened. Walk me through the week. What situations? What work did you have to do? What did you have to confront? And then he'd take me down this path. What did you learn from it? And it's so true. It's such an important thing that it's really stuck with me.
He taught you the discipline. He actually practiced.
Yeah,
it with
the discipline
you.
Of evaluated experience. And of course, you know, that's what the three of us do with each other all the time. We do it at retreats. We do it after retreats. We do it just about our own life. So I see Jim McFarland put up here. Plato is credited with the quote, "An unexamined life is not worth living." Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
That, think how important he thinks that is. It's not worth living a life if you're not examining it. Yikes, that's scary.
Yeah. So, you know, one of the things, and I will put up some of these questions, you know, a few at a time. John and Sam and I were talking about, gosh, what? If we are living in this current moment in an unexamined position, in an unexamined, you know, mind frame, what kind of questions can we ask that would get us to start looking at our life? And I was coming from the standpoint of meeting with this group, which I will do tomorrow night and then 6 weeks after that. And I want them to examine their life so that they will understand God has taught you a thing or two. You've seen a thing or two, and you know a thing or two. And so, you know, how can I get them to look back and go, you know, I remember, and actually, because nothing is lost, right? We can always look back as God gives us remembrance and go, oh, you know what? I do remember going through that, and my sense is that God was teaching me this or training me in this or preparing me in this. So it's really never too late. So, as you guys talk a little bit, let me start putting these questions up. I can't put them all up at one time, so this is going to take me a minute here, or a few seconds.
Well, John, what are you thinking about all of this?
Well, this is first, I'm just enjoying listening to you guys because I'm just resonating with everything. I'm taken back to I was having a devotion one day, and I was reading. It was something like Psalm 49 that you had put in here where it says, "Why should I fear in times of trouble when the iniquity of those who cheat me surround me?" And my response to that verse or verses like that normally is, yeah, why should I? You know, God's on my side. He's got, you know, all the pat answers. But then it hit me, well, why do I fear? And so, again, it was just like you both have said so far, going underneath the surface of why I'm fearing. Not saying it's you shouldn't fear, so just don't do it. Instead, saying, so why do you? And that's why, while ago, when you were telling the story about the guy who was angry, I thought you brought him right to the cusp of a significant breakthrough in his life, and he walked away from it.
Mm-hmm.
Because you had asked him, why is it? Why do you think that is? And he just left in a huff. And I thought he was so close, and then he walked away. And I think a good question is, why do we walk away? Why is it so hard to go beneath the surface sometimes and do that self-examination?
Well, So, yeah, I mean, there's multiple levels of examination, but I think that either we haven't been trained. Like, I love the way I always forget Gary's mentor's name.
Paul Stanley.
Paul Stanley. I got like a. Anyway, I love the way Paul Stanley taught Gary the message, the wisdom, and then he reinforced it by asking every week. So what's happened and what have you learned? You know, because to answer your question, John, I think one of the reasons we don't do it is we just haven't been taught. You know, and Paul Stanley reinforced it and reinforced it and reinforced it till it became a habit with Gary, I'm guessing. I think another reason is fear. You know, we say something stupid at a party, and instead of saying, now, why was that a dumb thing to say? You know, maybe I know this audience is a little more uptight. They don't like jokes like that, so maybe I should be smarter, or maybe I didn't deliver it well. How could I learn to deliver it well? I don't know. Maybe just reliving that embarrassing moment is so painful that we don't want to go there. Even though we could just say, you know, I told a joke at a wrong time. Someone was having a serious moment, and I interrupted with a joke. I can just learn. Next time, don't tell the joke until it's a lighthearted moment. You know, we could learn something simple. But I think sometimes we're just afraid to go there. Those are my first two thoughts, John.
Yeah, and, you know, especially talking about fear, it occurred to me, so why are we afraid? And I know in my case, when you start going below the surface like that, you're going to, sooner or later, and usually pretty soon, you're going to hit the level of shame that you're encountering in your own life. And we all have the overall sense of shame, that, you know, that we don't measure up, that we aren't what we were intended to be. And so when we start asking the whys, we're going to be touching on that shame. And that's just a really hard place to go for everybody.
Right. So I do think of this guy, the story that Sam, you told, and John just referred to again. And, you know, I've walked away from situations where I was confronted about cynicism, anger, criticizing. And I've said the exact words that guy did. I'll never criticize again. I'll never give my opinion again. I'll never care again.
Oh, when did you say those things?
Oh, that's
never mind.
Business. But, and I've done it many times, and I've done it with my wife, unfortunately. But, you know what? I'll do it again because I haven't dealt with the problem.
Mm-hmm.
And my will says I will never do that again. But the problem is I've never stopped to say, why do I do that? That's right. That's an inappropriate response, and I've got to figure out why I keep doing it. So we were going to talk about this so much tonight, but Sam, as we've talked about, that there's kind of two levels of
yep.
life examining your life. One is, you look at literally your life, the things you've gone through, the things that went well, the things that didn't, things you were taught. What did you learn? That's life examination. But then there's a heart examination, right? Why was I so angry? Why am I so afraid to move? What, you know, and it goes on and on. And so I think tonight, because of time, we were going to kind of center in on the life examination, because there's much to learn. And it's very hard to offer something we're unaware of that we have. So, so let me give you some more examples. So I posted on there some questions that I think will help us reflect back on our life and go, you know, that makes me think of some things, like the question, you know, what tests or trials has God brought into your life, and what was God teaching you or developing in you through them? You know,
I have an answer to that right now.
Okay.
I have something. I mean, you've all heard, well, you may have heard, about Carla's and my wife's and my long search for a new house, and how we sold the house, we couldn't find something by the move-out date, so we were going to rent, and then the new owner said, no, you can stay for a few months just for free. So we stayed, but at the end of those 2 months were expiring, we had to start looking for a rental. They said, no, you can stay longer. So right now, they've said, we sold the house in August, and they said we can stay through May. And they keep extending it, you know, 2 more months because we can't find the house. And we keep saying, God, why can't we find this house? I mean, it is a daily cry from our hearts. But in the middle of all this, we realized that our search for this house brought up some old baggage from the time we looked for this house. When we bought this house, you know, 27 years ago. And when we bought this house 27 years ago, we didn't do a good job. And now we're off looking for the new house. And we never really got healing for that old stuff. And as we look, I sometimes think God is saying, Sam, I have something more important for you right now. And more important than finding a house is I want you to have a healed relationship with your wife. You know, and I think God has allowed this trial of not finding a house. I mean, my wife and I are embarrassed. This is a first world problem, you know. This is not a third world problem. But I think God has allowed this trial to come into our life because God says, I have something else that's more important, and your eyes on the wrong thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's so important. So Sam, let me just ask you to, so if you were to say, if you were to communicate something that you want someone to learn, not you, they haven't gone through this, but you learn something from us that you think they need to know, what would you say to them? After you told the story, for instance, what would you say? What you need to learn, what you need to remember is what?
I think that when you're going through some difficulties, you know, where you know that God could just snap his fingers and just say, hey, we got 3 retreats a month for the next year, you know, Gary, or Sam, here's your next house. I know God could snap his fingers. And when God doesn't, and when I think my desire is not a bad thing, you know, I'm not asking for a castle and I'm not asking for a house with a moat. You know, I mean, when we're asking sort of normal, I think sometimes the thing that I would say to learn about this is look for other things God might be saying are more important. Look for some other things where God says, you know, I got the house covered. That's no problem. But I needed to get your attention because something else is more important.
Yeah.
And I never, you know, who knows what that other thing is? You know, because for each one of us is different at different seasons in our life. So when a reasonable request of God seems to be delayed, what else might God be wanting to say to me in that time? I guess that's what I would say. That would be the lesson. And that would be the lesson for myself. I mean, that's your real question, Gary. Your real question is not what am I going to say to somebody else. It's what am I going to say to myself next time I get a delay in my life.
Yeah. Well, okay, so let me read the second question because I got an answer for the second question, or I got a story. So the second question was, what feedback have you been given, positive or painful, well done or poorly done, even if it was good feedback, but they didn't do it well, so it hurt, and what was the point? So I can tell you, I remember this years ago. I had mentioned something to somebody that I shouldn't have said, and this was in the context of a ministry I was working in. This is way back, you know, when I was in my late 20s. In other words, I had gossiped. I had said something that was not anybody else's business about somebody else. And the guy I reported to called me in his office one day, and he said, you know, I heard that you actually talked about this with someone else. Now, he knew of this because it was a staff problem or something, and he was aware of it. And I think I was allowed to be aware of it, but he knew that I had told someone else because they had said something. And I immediately said, I didn't say that. I lied. I couldn't even tell you what I said, but I know I lied. I was trying to get out of this. I was caught, and I didn't want to be caught. And it was kind of one of those things where he couldn't go any further with me, right? Because if I'm in my position, if I didn't say it, he couldn't prove I did. But he knew I did.
And you.
And I just remember he said to me, he told me this point. He said, Gary, he said, you can be sober as a judge, but if 3 people tell you you're drunk, you better go lay down. And you know what? He had me. I knew what he was saying. He said, you can tell me you didn't do it, but there are 3 people that say you did, so you just better go confess it. I have never forgotten that, you know, with the idea that, listen, you may think you're innocent of something. You may think you didn't do that, or you didn't mean that, or you didn't come across that way. But if several people tell you that, you better act as if it is true, because it probably is. I mean, I have never forgotten that expression, the way he said that to me. That was a life lesson. And you know, I've had to tell somebody recently the same thing who said, you know, I didn't do that, and that wasn't my fault. And I had to say, I had to kind of give that expression and just let him sit with it for a little bit, you know.
I had a similar experience, and this goes way, way back to my first year on staff with Campus Crusade. I had been dating a girl, and towards the end of that summer, we broke up, but we had already made a date with some friends to go hiking in the mountains in Colorado. And my friend said, well, do you and her want to still go? And I said, yeah, we'll still go. And she was willing to, so we went, and it was a miserable day, you know, absolutely miserable. And I didn't treat her very well. He called me the next day and got with me, and he was such a master at doing this. It was the confrontation, but it was confrontation from somebody who really loved me. He was very gentle. He prefaced it by saying, I've got something I need to say to you that's very hard. Are you in a place where you can receive it? And so I thought for a minute. I said, okay, yeah, I am. And then he just said, you really treated Renee pretty bad yesterday, and I think you really need to ask her forgiveness. And it was just the way he set me up for that, and the love that I knew he had for me, and I definitely needed to do what he said. So I immediately went to her, and you know, it was the first time I've ever been through a breakup with a girl. They always end in just bad, you know, bad feelings. You're uncomfortable around each other and all this stuff. I went to her and I confessed that I really did treat you bad, and I'm really sorry for that, and would you forgive me? And he coached me on to say that, to say those words, would you forgive me? And she said yes, and I'm telling you, immediately our relationship became a very close friendship and has lasted to this day. I was shocked by the turnaround. And I just think his eyes on my life and examining that and showing me that I was wrong really was a significant step forward for me.
Yeah. So John, again, if you were to tell that story to another person, let's just say a younger man, what would be the point that you would want him to receive from your story, from what you experienced?
There's two
for
points.
His life.
Yeah. One would be when you see something in someone else's life, it's kind of like in Galatians when he says, you who are spiritual and you see somebody caught up in a sin, restore them, but in a spirit of gentleness, keeping an eye on yourself. There is a way to approach somebody when you see an aspect of their life that needs addressing. And there's a good way and there's a bad way. And so my friend Mark did it in a very good, positive, loving way that encouraged me forward and helped me step through a boundary in my life. And then I think the other lesson was for me to know that when there is an aspect of my life that needs correction, particularly when it's with respect to somebody else, to just have the guts to go and openly say you were wrong and ask forgiveness, it's just amazing what that does.
Yeah. See, it just strikes me again, everyone, as we're doing this, is we have had more profound experiences in our life than we realize, probably. And that's what's always so fascinating when you know, we go back and we tell our story from beginning to present. We just, and in hearing other stories, things come up and we go, oh my goodness, I do remember this thing now. And God has given us more, you know, more wisdom, perspective, training than we realize most of the time, because we don't examine our life very often or enough, and then we tend to not write it down so that we can recall it again. I just think it's just such an important thing. So let me give you, I'll give you another story on myself. I'm looking at my list of stories. So many, many years ago, going back to Paul Stanley, we had started this organization, not an organization, I would say, you know, the word, an initiative called Halftime Journey. And we were going to start working at that point because the book Halftime had come out. We were going to work with, it's funny, you know, 50-year-olds, second half people. And Paul asked me if I want to do this because I was fascinated with calling and if I wanted to do this with him. And we had put, you know, we had met together for months putting together, you know, kind of how this was going to work and a curriculum and all talks and all those things. And we had done, we were doing our first Friday night, Saturday kind of seminar, conference, to really just encourage guys to sign up for the seven-month kind of walk with us, let us work with you. And again, I'm just following Paul Stanley. I'm just learning from him. And so we were in Tulsa, Oklahoma, I believe it was, and Friday night I had a talk and then he had a talk, and the next day I think that was my only talk, and then Paul was speaking and another man, and so I remember I spoke, and you know, I thought I did okay, and I wasn't new to speaking, but I just noticed that I just didn't feel like I had the audience, that they were not really engaging with me. They were polite, and they were looking at me. They were not doing something else, but I could tell I was not connecting with these men. Something was not working right. I was doing everything I knew to do. Well, after I was done, I think we had a coffee break or something, and then Paul spoke, and I was sitting up toward the front, kind of at the speaker table, so I could, but on the side, so I could see the faces of most of the men in this group, and they were glued to him. They were absolutely engaged. They were writing notes. They were smiling. I mean, their faces were communicating, I'm listening, you're impacting me, their hand and their handwriting, I could see that everything was saying this was having huge impact. And I mean, it was killing me. And in that, I felt like such a disappointment. It wasn't that, you know, this isn't fair, I tried hard too, but it was rather, man, I don't know how to do this thing. And so I went to Paul when we were done that night, back to our hotel room, and I went to him and I said, Paul, I'm so sorry. I have really blown this thing. I don't know what happened, but I'm sorry. And I remember he said to me, he said, Gary, you did a good job. You really did. You presented what needed to be presented. You presented the best you could. It was good. But he said, you have to understand something. You are a 40-year-old, and you speak like a 40-year-old, and you're going to have the impact of a 40-year-old. He said, I am 50. I have a different impact in these men's lives. I speak differently. I'm different when I'm up in front of them. He said, and you be a 40-year-old. Don't try to be a 50-year-old. You be yourself, but there's a difference. And I remember it was just, I wanted to go to shame in it, but it was Paul saying, no shame. You're good, but you can't be something you're not. This is what you are. Just be yourself and let that be enough. And I have tried to hold on to that through the years of I am who I am, and yeah, I can't have the effect other people have, but just let that go. It's not who you are. That's their effect. And that's okay. And that was a perspective changer in my life.
That's great. That's a great story, Gary.
Yeah, it was a big deal. He had a big impact on my life. So, any other stories as we kind of come to the end of our time that you want to share?
I'll share a quick one. You know, and this is just kind of flipping the switch a little bit. That's not a good phrase. we like
turning it off now, right? Okay.
I'll just shut up. No, we like to ask the question, why do I hurt so much, or why am I afraid, or why am I distracted, or, you know. I had an experience a number of years ago when I felt like God asked me, why does this hurt so much? I had gone through an experience that was probably one of the most painful experiences of my life. And And so he asked the question. And so I just began to journal over the next few days, and I had no answers whatsoever. And it was like the question just sat out there, and it literally sat out there for about 3 or 4 years. And I would go back to my journal and revisit that. It would come to my memory from time to time. It was like God just always took me back to, so why did that hurt so bad, John? What was that pain telling you? And that was about a 3 or 4 year experience. And then I won't go into all the details, but one night it came to me. I think God just kind of opened my eyes to what had happened. And it was a huge revelation of something true in my life that I needed to see. But I think the point of that is, I think God is always about the business of taking us below the surface. And there's just so much value to getting that question from him and then taking that question from him, to him. Why does this hurt? Why am I fearful? Why do I feel shame? And letting him open our eyes and speak to our heart about those things. You know, self-examination isn't really just purely self-examination. It's really putting the eyes of God on our life and hearing from him as well as the eyes of others.
That's good. Absolutely. Sam, what was the line, and I know that you had in your email, and it was really inspired from something John had texted us as we were, or emailed that we were talking about this possible conversation tonight, about, you said the difference, you know, John, you talked about the difference between self-examination and self-absorption or self-centeredness.
Right, and I think that, because, you know, the people are accused of being navel gazers, you know, you just, you know, being absorbed with looking at yourself. And I think the term we came up with is obsessive self-centeredness. We want to avoid obsessive self-centeredness. And I think the truth is, when we're examining these things, it's not obsessive self-centeredness. It's wisdom. And you know, we're trying to save other people as much as we're trying to save ourselves. So I don't think it's the bad. I think it's actually the good version of all this.
Yeah. So let me, I'll put this up for us. Let me share two verses that I think really underscore the importance of examining your life. And so one is the Galatians verse, right? And this is the Amplified. I like this. But let every person carefully scrutinize and examine and test his own conduct and his own work.
Mm-hmm.
He can then have the personal satisfaction and joy of doing something commendable in itself alone without resorting to boastful comparison with his neighbor. You know, just the examined life, the importance of that. And then the other, which we are so familiar with, but speaks of this so well, and that is Matthew 3:3-5. And it says, you know, why do you look at the speck of sawdust in your brother's eye and pay no attention to the plank in your own eye? Right? So the point is, you know, you may see something in your brother's eye, but have you examined your own life? You know, you've got something there. And I think this is just, you know, an exhortation of look at your life carefully. You know, it's, and for many reasons, but the self-examined life is just important.
That's great.
So, any last thoughts? We're just at 40 minutes right now. Any last thoughts, John, Sam?
I'll just throw up my agreeing wholeheartedly with what David just put about journaling. I think journaling is such a key component of this whole process to document on paper what you're understanding is, what you're getting from God, what you're seeing, and coming back to it. I love to go back to my journals and reread and pray through things.
Yeah, you know, John, real quickly with that, I hate to say that, I'm glad to say I started, but hate to say I didn't finish. And that is, I remember a while back, I thought, I'm going to go back through my journals, and I'm going to start another journal with the key points from the other journals. You know, like, what are the things that really stand out that I need to remember? You know, things that God said to me about me, things that God said to me about relationships or about just life in general. And in one sense, Sam and John, that's what the three of us did when we met at Sam, your house. We went back through all of our journals and kind of bring the really important things forward. But, yeah, journaling, I mean, even if we examine our life and we write it down, if we don't go back to revisit those, they'll be lost again. And our world around us can't afford for us to lose it, let alone we can't afford to lose what God's taught us.
Mm-hmm.
Sam, final thoughts?
I think the one final thought I'd have is, I think some of our best self-examination takes place with friends, where we have friends that we can trust who will treat us gently and graciously, but honestly. You know, I always think of Nathan, you know, the prophet who came to David, tells the story of this lost sheep, you know, this widow who's lost a sheep, you know, that's not the right story, never mind. But anyway, David is furious, and Nathan says, "You are the man." I've always thought, they must have had some kind of friendship for him to be able to do this.
Right.
He knew just how to get David's heart. He knew David's hatred of injustice. And how is he going to express this to David? And I thought, there's some kind of friendship here that I think that we have, but I think that we all need.
Yeah.
Because no matter how much we do our self-evaluation, we sometimes just need outside eyes.
Yes.
So I think it's all part
Absolutely.
Of it.
Yep. So let me just say as we wrap up, to just add one more thing, and that is to say again to everyone, you know more than you know. You have
mm-hmm.
more to offer than you're aware of. And the only way I know to make sure that I offer all that God has given me is to rediscover it again, remember it again. And I'm not saying that apart from God. Of course, God has to come in. He has to work through our memory and direct us back into thoughts and all these kind of things. But he has given us so much that others need. We have to be, in a sense, responsible, take ownership of it and say, thank you, that was a gift. And I want to offer that gift to others as well as live true to the gift. So I just want to encourage everybody to maybe those are just a few questions we put up, but we try to come up with questions that might trigger your heart, your remembering certain things. And I'm sure there's another 50 that could be added to that. But we just want to encourage you to do the same as we're trying to do, is to go back, remember, so that then we can turn around and offer it to others.
Mm-hmm.
So, all right, this is fun, everyone. Thank you for joining us. We, John and myself and Sam, really enjoyed this, as always, with you. So thank you. And we will see you next week.
Yep.
Good night.
Night.
Good night.